from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is the Good Atheist.
Welcome to the GoodAtheist.net bonus podcast. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Today on the bonus podcast, we have part two of our whole Moses trilogy. If you remember correctly, if you're a fucking hardcore listener, you remember that probably one of the only reasons you're actually signing up is to hear part two of how Moses got it done, the biblical story of a murderous tyrant.
Well, he hasn't been too much of a murderous tyrant thus far. Well, actually, never mind. Sorry, forgot about some of those. Because God was more the murderous tyrant than Moses. So far, Moses only killed that one. That one dude.
Yeah.
We're gonna cover
that in a synopsis. So if you're worried about what happened again, like you had short-term memory or something like that, or you just didn't, I was the background music to you getting it on.
That's just a weird...
You don't think that's happened? Fuck off, you know, man.
Unless, quote-unquote, get it on means doing the dishes or vacuuming the house.
No. All right, listen. We recently, I don't know if you were aware of this, but we recently passed the 500,000 mark for amount of times the show's been downloaded and listened to. And you don't fucking think that in 500,000 times someone hasn't shagged during the fucking show. You don't think that anyone at the very least had their dick sucked while I was talking in the background? You don't think that happened?
I really don't.
In 500,000 times.
You just have to understand that statistically, the likelihood of that happening compared to other much lamer and less interesting things happening, it's just...
I don't even know why you think that that's that interesting. It might be interesting to you since you haven't been late in, like, whatever millennium, but for the rest of us out there that are getting fucked regularly, it just happens. Drop of a hat sometimes, and you know sometimes that drop of a hat is a fucking... the good atheist laying it down, fucking laying the smack down, and you just happening to have sex at that time. Fuck you, man. It's happened before. It will happen again. It's probably happening right now. Right now.
I get laid.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're right. You get laid. Let's move on with the show. So, actually, the part two I forgot to mention is we're going to talk about Osama bin Laden being dead. It's topical, but it's what everyone's still fucking talking about. So we'll say a few things. But first, let's do a synopsis of the last show so you don't feel like a fucking alien to this. And if you listen to it just for the first time, that this is the first show you've ever listened to for some weird fucking reason, then you're not going to feel like an idiot. So we were talking about Moses. So in a nutshell, Moses, born of a slave race that had become gigantically populated since, I suppose, God was like, I'm on your side, and I'm going to make you lots of babies. So they have lots of babies, and the Pharaoh decides, there's too many of them, I'm afraid I'm going to enslave them all. He's not happy with that. He tries to kill all the males. Moses, being a young male, about to be slaughtered, gets put in a basket, floated along the river, gets picked up by the unnameless Pharaoh's daughter, who raises him like a son. He goes on to murder another human being just simply for torturing other Jews. He escapes, marries this Ethiopian chick, and then later comes back to Egypt, learns a couple of fucking magic tricks, convinces everyone that he's a prophet. Then he starts issuing some demands to the Pharaoh, threatens him, and then there's the fucking 10 plagues. We're not going to cover those. You listen to the show if you don't know where the fucking 10 plagues are. And when we last left the story, it was right at the point where Pharaoh says, after having his own son, the heir to his throne, murdered by this Yahweh character, finally relents and say, please get your fucking people out of here. End of synopsis. That was part one.
Well, I do want to put in one important point.
Yep.
Is that the Pharaoh really wanted to get rid of these people a while ago, but God hardened his heart. That was my favorite part about the whole thing.
Yes,
because the whole story has to be presented in such a way as that God wanted it to happen like this. God wanted to go through all these plagues, so God made the Pharaoh go through it all. And finally God said, okay, I'll let the Pharaoh let you guys go, which is just a really weird roundabout way of going about it. But whatever.
Well, God said it himself. He wanted to show everyone that his power. He's like, you know what? These pagans or whatever, I'm going to kill them and be like, I am the real God. So he wanted that. He wanted to kind of his, like, watch me hit a home run. And by home run, I mean tens of thousands dead.
You know, I would figure a more impressive display of power would be like a trade in places magical switcheroo where all of a sudden the slaves wake up and they're in power and then all their former rulers are the slaves in their place. And I think the Jews really would have appreciated that more than the whole, okay, you can go off into the desert, enjoy your rocks and drought.
You do realize, of course, that there was such a day in the Roman Empire, right, where slaves one day were the masters and the masters were the slaves. They actually did that. Just to fuck around. I mean, this is how crazy the Romans were. They were like, yeah, one day of the year. And I suppose in a weird way, it must have been kind of their fail-safe of saying, don't treat your slaves too bad because one day of the year they're in fucking charge, which is a pretty unique thing.
That sounds probably like an optional holiday that was done in a very specific manner.
Yeah, you know, it's bureaucratic.
The undercover boss of the Roman Empire. I don't think it's really it's not something that you can really apply across the board.
Are you saying it was faked to some degree?
I'm just saying that it was probably more lip service than anything else.
All right. Well, you know what? In any event, maybe some people took it fucking seriously, right? Like anybody does. I mean, some people take Valentine's Day seriously, huh? Even though everyone knows that it's a bullshit holiday. So guess what? When it's really a holiday, you still got to think about it. So at least they had that. But that's ancient Rome. That's not ancient Egypt. That concept would have been like, no, that's a bit much. But yeah, you're right. The hardening of the heart is a very important part. And for part two, it's at least going to play some part in the following. Okay, so we just last left. Pharaoh says, please get the hell out of Dodge. So they kindly decide to leave, but not before they're going to borrow a bunch of valuables from the local Egyptians. So they basically, what's the word I'm looking for? They loot them. They loot the Egyptians before they leave. Yeah.
Fair enough.
And what I love is in the King James Version, they say borrow. So I didn't actually make that up. This is the word they use. They were like, can you lend me your gold, please, and your valuables? I'll be right back with them. Yeah. And remember that these were the same people whose lives had been devastated by 10 plagues. Now they get robbed by the victors. That seems like a good thing. So as soon as that's done, the God instructs the Jews on the specific honor that they're now supposed to have in terms of this massacre. Like, remember when we last left God and his 10 plagues, he said, I'm going to do this for a reason. Well, to pay tribute to that, now he says there's a new law is that every firstborn of whatever fucking livestock that you have, first male firstborn, you have to sacrifice to me in celebration of that day. So you will need to kill whatever innocent creature that just instantly pops out of a womb, be like, send it right back to fucking hell because I desire its flesh. And it is mine. You shall not consume it.
Well, look, I don't think that the fact that it's always it's an innocent doe-eyed little cow or whatever animal it's going to be, or it's just a cute little sheep. And oh, it's so innocent is the big issue. The big issue is, well, we were going to kind of eat it and
use it for wealth.
And now we can't do that. You got to figure that the first of every single you have to track your animals to the point where you know which ones are which and which ones
are. Oh, yeah, but you know, man. You know. And remember what I was saying before when they were all like, sacrifice goat in episode one that hasn't been, befouled or sinned. And I'm like, I start to believe that just has to be a specific intent to say, bring only the sheep or the goats that have not been fucked by you, sir. Is that, trust me, when there's a lot of fucking bestiality going on, you're probably keeping pretty good track. You even may be wondering at that time if some of them is your offspring. Yeah, Pan's going to pop right out of there.
Yeah, it could be a possibility. There are like cultures where goat fucking is acceptable. Like I was there's this Vice documentary on I can't remember if they're the goat fuckers or the sheep fuckers of South America. It's somewhere, I can't remember if it's in Venezuela or around that area, but it's somewhere in the northern area of South America where it's just like a normal thing. Like, perfectly acceptable. And they admitted on camera, yeah, we fuck goats. We just do it. No big deal.
It's a rite of passage, in fact. You have to fuck a goat.
It's there. It's got a vagina. A goat vagina.
It's very female-like, unfortunately.
Well, vaginas are vaginas, I imagine.
I don't want to put this as kind of like a theory here. But I'm going to say, out of all the different species that have existed that we kind of formed a symbiotic relationship with, you know, we look at dogs and the kind of services that they provide. You know, they're very useful. And then you think, well, we have sheep and goats, but why those of the animals around? Maybe they would have been different. The selection would have been different had they not had such female-like genitalia. I'm just going to put that out there.
Are you saying that all the animals that we keep around, the more successful ones, the ones that we bred and kept,
yeah.
Part of that had to do with the fact that their vaginas are awesome.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay,
yeah.
Well,
I'm saying that we're that.
Let's roll with
I'm
that.
Saying we're that disgusting. Okay, so anyways, so they're now the Jews have been freed, and it has been exactly 430 years since the covenant with God has taken place. If you remember, the covenant's actually supposed to be 400 years, so he's only about 30 years late, which is probably like half an hour in God time, right? I'm just going to put that out there. So it's still a little bit rude. He was still like 30 years late, and he's been demanding foreskins for 400 years. If you recall, Moses was almost killed for not having sacrificed the tip of his son's penis for him, because apparently, like, he's nuts for that shit. I think that's what he survives on, honestly. That's why maybe in America, why God is so strong there, is because half the males in the United States are circumcised. That's more than in any other country, I can assure you, with the exception of maybe Israel, okay? We don't chop off a lot of tips of penises everywhere else because it's costly, and it's obviously disgustingly inhumane. Like, you don't even give that poor little fucking kid any anesthetics. It's like, you pop out of the womb, time for the tip of your penis to go, pal.
It's pretty messed up when you think about it. It's one of those things that, that's going to be another fun little shitstorm once we really start looking at it, because already people are starting to kind of question whether or not you should be allowed to do that to a child.
Yeah, I think that there was a Penn and Teller episode on circumcision where they were talking, but one doctor was like, they don't feel any pain, they don't even scream. And one doctor was like, oh, that's because they feel pain more and they can't scream anymore because they have a lot more nerve endings than you do. So nicely done. Way to go. You basically took them at their most vulnerable times for many babies where they're sort of like floods of fucking chemicals are in their brain teaching them things about love and affection and all this other shit. And you're like, give me a knife, buddy. I'm going to... It's like, not the time. Not the time. So anyways, 430 years, so he's a little bit late. So they take off into the desert. Now, this is a pretty, you know, it's a desert, man. And the Bible says that roughly 600,000 of them leave for Egypt. Now, let's put that in perspective here. Imagine a gigantic concert, and I mean the biggest fucking concert that you can think of, and imagine that these people now from this concert are going to roam around the desert looking for shit. I mean, this is a plague of locusts here.
What concert are you thinking of? 600,000?
You've never... The SARS concert was actually bigger than that. You don't remember in Toronto in fucking 2003?
Okay, well, sure. I guess that was a mega concert.
That was a mega
concert.
600,000
is...
yeah, you can get 600,000 in a mega concert. I said the biggest concert you could imagine. I named one that I had imagined, that I had attended, that had apparently been attended by that many people. So up yours, dick face. So that many people take off, but they're in a desert, right? I mean, maybe there's one or two oases out there, maybe. It would look like a tiny cup of water that you're just passing along to more than 500,000 people. So I'm going to assume here that the numbers, even if something like this did happen, which, by the way, there's absolutely zero historical proof of, but even if something like that happened, I'm like, 600,000, really? Really? Take off to Egypt? Okay, whatever. And apparently they move, like, slower than molasses. But I'm not surprised, right? It's 600 fucking thousand. Everyone's going to move slow, and it's a desert. I mean, if compared to the kind of oasis that is Egypt, I mean, you wonder why Egypt was powerful for as long as it was? Because the Nile, when it floods, and it floods quite a bit, produces so much fucking fertile land that everywhere else around that sucks, really sucks, basically. So that's why Egypt rocked, and now they decided, we're getting out of here. And we're going to go to the desert. That's a fucking great idea. So they take apparently they take the long road, because they say they're there for 40 years. And from Egypt to the land of Canaan would not have taken more than a few months for even the most lazy traveler. So apparently they decide they're just going to take the long way around. But when they take off, God decides that he's going to change the Pharaoh's heart again. Remember that whole, like, I'm going to harden his heart thing?
Yeah.
Okay, he does this again. And everyone around has now realized that the Jews have stolen all their possessions and essentially, like, really fucked them over. And they're gone. And they're like, this is not acceptable. So Pharaoh decides, with his hardened heart, that he's going to take about 600 chariots, which by then are pretty much tanks, right? I mean, 600 chariots, you can mow down. I don't care how many Jews there are. You can mow them all down. Just with your crazy chariots with, like, blades on the sides, man. It's like playing Dead Rising and just fucking going through a whole bunch of zombies with your crazy fucking chariots of death. So he decides 600 of these bad boys fucking take off after the Jews, who've been moving like molasses, who have reached, well, according to the Bible mistranslation, the Red Sea, although everyone says it's the Sea of Reed, which is apparently like a marshland. But we're just going to go with the Red Sea, right? Let's fucking go for it, because that's what everybody believes. So they reach the Red Sea, and all of a sudden they see the fucking pharaohs are coming. And guess what? Everyone's like turns to Moses and be like, was that your plan, pal? To fucking get us all killed? Yay, we made it. Thanks for the freedom. We really appreciated those, like, 2 days of, like, not being under the leash. That was fucking great. Like, nicely done. So they're not very nice. They're kind of like not cool. So Moses tells them to chill the fuck out, and that God is going to do the fighting for them. This is usually not a good sign, right? When if your cult leader's telling you that when the fucking feds are showing up with, like, guns, I think it's time to duck.
There have been some historic moments where people put their faith in God on the battlefield, and it did not work out that well for them.
Yeah, the best example is actually the Dead Sea Scrolls. You know, there was a whole community of Jews that had sort of left, I think, Judea. It stayed there for a long time while it was under Roman rule. And they decided at one point, they had received a revelation that God was going to show up in the battlefield and defeat the Romans. So they took their whole fucking families there. Every last one of them. That's where they went to die. That was a fucking massacre, so... It's happened many times. The person's like, don't worry, trust in God. Oh, dear Jesus, no. So he says, don't worry, trust in God. Because God had told him, fucking, I'm going to part the waters for you, bitch. Just take your staff. Remember that thing in part one, that magical Harry Potter wand that he's carrying around? The one that can turn into a snake? And apparently eat other snakes? It's like the Pokemon Master snake stick. Well, he's got it, and he just smashes it on the ground, and the fucking seas part, and they're like, oh, you know, like, this is like the Ten Commandments. This is the part where they always show in the movie trailers when you're watching the Ten Commandment thing. It was like, bam, watch this ocean thing. That apparently, I think they said they did it with tomato soup and special effects or whatever. Anyways, the point is, he's part of the sea, so the Jews run through it. And meanwhile, the fucking chariots of the Pharaoh are, like, right behind, right? It's kind of with the chase music and shit like that. I mean, you've seen the movie, right?
It's very dramatic. Very dramatic, I imagine.
Yeah. So there you go. So it's very dramatic. And then all of a sudden, when the final Jew crosses the other side, Pharaoh's right, you know, and his army of 600 tanks are just right smack dab in the middle. And apparently at one point God blinds them or causes confusion. This is what the Bible says. He confuses them. So that they just, I don't know, they're disorganized or something like that. They get slowed down. Because honestly, I mean, they're chariots, right? They're going to catch up in like no time. It's like, let's take our cars to this roving caravan of hippies that are headed for the fucking desert. Yeah, we're going to catch up real fast. So he causes some confusion. All of a sudden, right when he passes by, Moses lowers the fucking force field of Jew power. And the fucking waves crash down. They kill everyone. Every fucking single person on this death wagon gets killed. And their bodies wash up to the shores. And everyone was like, yay! And they rejoice in Moses' slaughter. So that was that's them. That's how they buy their freedom. That's their fucking golden moment. You know, like their Rudy moment was when they drowned 600 tanks.
You act so sympathetic towards the Egyptians. I don't have any sympathy for them. In this story, I cheered the Jews on at this point.
Why? God hardened the hearts of the Pharaoh. They were innocent bystanders. They were just soldiers doing their job, man. They were fucking soldiers being sent to Afghanistan and fucking dying for somebody else. I feel sympathy for these people.
You know who else just did their jobs? The Nazis.
You pull the Nazi card, you know that's a fallacy now.
Oh, it's just so, I don't even understand.
There's a specific fallacy for that.
I'm just saying, you're sounding like a Jew hater.
I know, but I'm saying that if the God hardens the heart of the Pharaoh, then even the results that ensue are not even the Pharaoh's fault.
I know, but from this ridiculous moral...
No, come on. What is your fucking comeback to that? You got none?
My comeback is these soldiers are planning on chasing down and slaughtering and re-enslaving the Jews. Yeah, they get what's coming to them. Sorry.
Well, the world is a cruel place. So, finally, Jews are out of the desert. But there's a problem, right? I think we all realize what happens when 600,000 people go to a desert and decide sort of like take off to this promised land. And by promised land, I mean a land that's inhabited by other people that you have to kill to own. So this is promised to you through the voices in your head. Now everybody starts being like, what the fuck are we going to eat, right? It's a pretty good question. You're going to see a trend, by the way. You're going to see a trend where throughout the Bible, the Jews are always complaining, by the way. So that's just not a stereotype. That's like written right there in the Bible. They're always complaining. So they're like, what are we going to eat? What are we going to drink? Did you fucking try to get us killed? They're always going to say that, even though the first time they do, which is understandable, okay? The first time you come out to the desert with your crazy bearded weirdo that has a bunch of shitty magic tricks that fucking tricked you, but somehow pulled it off, right? He's like, ta-da, we're free. And now you're like, okay, well, cool. Even though I'm like, I don't even know what the fuck happened, but I still need to eat, buddy. I can understand a kind of like a bit of a revolt going on. As saying, I think you actually got us all killed. But Moses says, no, don't worry. I talk to God on my own spare time. Because remember, no one ever sees other than his brother and some other dude. No one ever sees Moses talking to God. Doesn't really happen. So it's always Moses sort of going away somewhere and then just talking to him. But he says, yeah, God told me that everything is going to be fucking fine. He's going to rain down some manna, this magical shit, this powder stuff. You're just going to gather up and you're going to make food out of it. And that's what you're going to eat for the next 40 years.
I hope it's nutritious.
Apparently so. Although what's pretty funny is the first time he rains down, everybody gathers it and they're like, yay. And then God makes a pretty specific thing. He's like, on Friday, I'm going to drop down double the load. So that on the seventh day, you're not going to be collecting any. Because he's apparently really, really fucking nuts about this taking the day off shit. He's all about that. It's like, you do not work. I will fucking kill you, man, if you work on this day. He just does not want anyone to work on Saturday. So, I don't know. Anyway, I can't explain it. So, on the first day, when they collected... Moses tells him, and here's the weird thing, too, because let me ask you this. You got your crazy bearded weirdo guy who says there's going to be manna that falls from heaven, and sure enough, some manna falls from heaven, and you eat it. And then he tells you that you can't save any, that you have to eat it all, every day. Like, you can't square any away. Wouldn't you be kind of like, why? Like, what the fuck, right? You'd be like, no, I'm going to square some away, which is what they do. And then God sort of, like, gets angry at them. But I mean, like, how can you not, how can you get angry at people being like, please, store away food, right?
Well,
and then he makes them do that on the Friday. Like, only store food on the Friday? Like, these are weird rules, man.
Look, I mean, it would be a bad situation if all of Moses' miracles were a little bit more flim-flammy. Like, if instead of parting the Red Seas in the glorious way that you see in the Ten Commandments, it's more, they managed to cross the river because the river was dry, and then when the Egyptians got there, there had been a flood, so the Egyptians couldn't cross. Then all of a sudden you have to start questioning whether or not Moses really has God on your side, and you have to start worrying about this whole eat all the food every day and don't save it stuff. You know?
Yeah, it's true. From their perspective, I'm sure it looked a lot less glorious and be like, well, a lot of those victories seemed like they were mostly chance, and the whole 10 plague things could have just been like a result of, you know, some lots of dead animals around and kind of weird cycles that happen sometimes in nature. I mean, like, we see them all the time. Have you ever seen, like, every 50 years there's, like, weird, like, crazy infestations of fucking locusts and shit? They happen, man. They fucking happen.
Well, just look at it like this. Moses comes back from the last encounter. He's like, the Pharaoh said we can go. They all go. A couple of days later, the Egyptians are chasing them down. Everyone's like, what the fuck, Moses? And Moses is like, I swear. I guess
he
God
told
must,
us we could go.
God must have just hardened his heart again.
Yeah, well, when you go back to it, and you remember what we were saying about, like, the you know, you can clearly tell these are fucking professional scammers. I mean, their magic tricks are so lame, right? They're so lame. Oh, I'm going to turn water to fucking blood. It's like the water to wine shit that you can buy a powder that does this. It's not really hard. I'm sure they actually probably have the technology to do that. Because guess what? Something that's really red, when you mash it up and dry it, it looks kind of white. So, ta-da, I made blood turn into sand. Or sand turn into blood. No, you didn't. It's bad magic. It's like bad science, is what it is. But yeah, okay, professional scammers. So the Egyptians are out of the way. Everyone's like, what's going on? He managed to pull out some food. So, whatever to that. But you can't store it except for on Fridays. So everyone's eating some manna, and that's fine. But for some weird reason, the water situation's not quite solved, so again, the Jews are like, oh, we're going to die of thirst, what have you done to us, and blah, 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 and God and Moses need to have a little bit of a talk, and Moses is like, yeah, these people are thirsty, so he gives him a bit of a magic trick, and he's like, strike a rock, and some fucking water's going to come out of it, and that's what he does. That's how they get their water a couple times in the Bible. It's like he just strikes the side of a mountain, boom, with his cane. Some water pours out of it. I'm like, again, 600,000. I don't care how fucking big that geyser is. It's going to be pretty fucking hard for 600,000 people to drink for 40 years. That's a lot of water.
It's the size of a decent sized city, 600,000.
Yeah, that's a, like, you got to strike a lot of rocks. Yeah. You think that you can do in a fairly large city? You think you can do with one water source that a dude struck with the end of his tiny stick?
Anyways, we're getting a little bit nitpicky here. I mean, obviously the entire story is stupid, so let's just roll on.
Okay, let's forget about the numbers, because I don't even care if it's like 500. I don't think you could actually feed anybody for 40 years in the desert, but we're just gonna go with it. So they got their water and they're happy for a little while, I suppose. And then you got to remember that they're on the road. So they're crossing a whole bunch of people's territories. And I guess at one point they run into the Amalekites, and who are not too happy to see them with the huge troop of people walking through your town. You probably get suspicious. This is an invading army. And trust me, in the Bible it says that the Jews left and they had weapons. So, you know, probably probably spears and shit. You're like, oh, we're just passing by. This huge troop, we're just passing by to our promised land that's actually inhabited by the Canaanites. This is where we're going. So, yeah, you look suspicious. So the Amalekites show up, and Moses tells his golden boy who's Joshua, who's essentially going to be his, like, heir. And he tells him, like, because basically Joshua is like the, what's him looking for? He's a bruiser, right? He goes around and he just kills everybody. That's what he's good at. So, can you think of a dude that we can associate with Joshua, sort of like put into people's minds? Who is Joshua?
Is he like
day?
The Rahm Emanuel of the, of this guy, of Moses's, committee?
Rahm Emanuel? Who the fuck is that?
You obviously don't pay enough attention to politics. Let's see. I don't know. He's like the Bobby Probert. He's like the hockey enforcer on the hockey team.
Okay, fine. All right. He's his hockey. He's his enforcer. He's his golden boy. And he tells him, all right, go out there and fight them while I stand on top of this hill and just raise my arms. I'm just going to raise them. This is a big deal, okay? Because every time he holds up his hands, apparently the Jews win. And every time he lowers his hands, because I guess they get heavy, the Amalekites win. So his brother and some other dude have to sit him down on a rock and hold his hands up the whole fucking time in order for the Jews to win. And they're like, yay, Moses. And I'm like, what are you talking about, yay, Moses? He stood on a hill and raised his hands. He's a crazy old man with a giant beard. He didn't do anything. Joshua killed all those fucking dudes. What the fuck? Anyways, credit the old guy with the stick. That's a good idea. So they finally, they kick the Amalekites' ass, so they survive and live another day. So that's good.
So that was just that whole part of the story is just the we were passing through town and the Amalekites pick a fight and we fight them and we win and we keep moving.
Yeah, and the important thing is that, you know, this is Moses' battle because they make the big deal out of his sort of working so hard to keep his hands up.
the power of the wave, who knew?
Yeah, well, you know, maybe it helped the morale. I don't know. So by this time they're sort of like getting close to Mount Sinai, which is a big deal for them because this is where God is going to start talking to them, and by them I mean Moses. So at first God gives kind of the commandments in a really informal way. Right? He just says, I'm going to give the commandments through Moses. You're going to just go over to the people and you're going to tell them what are the rules. And we're going to cover the rules because first, rather than the story, because I want to talk about them because I don't call them the Ten Commandments because I think that's incorrect. I believe that there are nine commandments and one general statement. Okay? Because the first commandment is, I am God and I own you. That's the first quote-unquote commandment. Now, let me tell you something. It's not telling anyone anything to do. They're just saying, like, hello, I'm going to sign my name here, and this is the sort of title of deed. It's like, you are my property.
I don't really know.
Commandment.
The great thing about that commandment is that it's like a nice catch-all. If anybody's ever doing anything that you don't like, you could just point to the first commandment and smack them upside the head and be like, God owns you, bitch.
I suppose. Okay, so the other commandment that he sort of declares through Moses is that you're not allowed to have any idols. And you know, that doesn't seem like a big deal for us now, but I mean, let me tell you something. Idols were the shit, all right? You had them everywhere. It's like you didn't have a house without an idol. It'd be like someone says, you're not allowed to have a television, all right? That's the rule. No TV. That's what God says. That's the equivalent. So God says no TV.
Hmm.
So no idols. Then he says you can't use my name in vain. Although just to be on the safe side, most Jews call God Adonai, because even if you say Yahweh, you might get stoned to death. So they just call him another name, which is a way of kind of getting around the fact that what you're talking about. It's like using the N-word to say the word nigger. It's the same thing.
Well, what's kind of interesting about that one? Just stepping away from it in the context of the Moses story. Did you read Ricky Gervais's latest Easter message?
I did when he was saying, like, I follow all the commandments.
Yeah, basically. And his whole point on the God in vain one and how basically everybody takes it for it basically means don't say God or Jesus or God damn it or Jesus Christ. But I liked his interpretation of saying Don't use the Lord's name in vain, like, as a vanity thing, like, oh, God wanted me to win this sporting event, or thank God I won this Emmy. I thought that was a very interesting interpretation of it.
That is true. I kind of like that as well. So we'll say maybe that, because obviously with the word vain, can mean a variety of things, to be taken with some degree of interpretation. Then,
yeah,
right?
Well, it's all like that. In order to really get to the nuts and bolts about what you are and aren't allowed to do, you have to take it back to some pretty seriously far back translations.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so don't use my name in vain. And let me just reiterate here that every single rule that I'm mentioning is punishable by death. Okay? You get killed for any of this shit. So you say his name in vain, or whatever interpretation you want to have that, you die. You make any idols, you die. You do not recognize for some reason that God owns you, you die. Okay, so next one is that you do not work on the Saturday. This is my day, and you can't even have your slaves working. Like, you can't do shit. If anybody works and they work through you, you are to blame. So you should be killed. So it's like, Saturday is like a day of boredom, is what that day is.
Old Testament God is serious about a mandatory weekend, you know what I mean?
He really is. Have this time off or die. I'm like, you know what, maybe I just like my work. No, take the day off or you will perish. Okay, all right, I'll take a day off. Sheesh.
And they're really serious about work because, what is it, Jewish people are all crazy about the idea that during their Sabbath, you're not even allowed to, like, flick on. Wasn't there, we talked about it in another show, there was these Orthodox people that lived in an apartment building, and they were upset because there was an automatic light that turned on if they stepped outside the building, and they were freaking out because that was work in some weird interpretation of the text or of
right.
that commandment.
And we basically said that their argument was, we're offended and we don't want to work at all. And we're like, your beliefs are stupid. Shut the fuck up. That was basically my roundabout way of saying it. Be like, shut the fuck up with your dumb shit. That's just some dumb shit. That's what that is. I don't want to turn on a light. So instead, I want you to remove this really safe apparatus that also saves energy. Because I feel that somehow when I turn it on, Magic Man will hate me and I'll go to hell. Shut the fuck up. Like, shut the fuck up, please.
Do they believe in hell?
No, they believe in, I think, a place called Shalom, I think is what it is. No, not
well,
Shalom.
No, Shalom is...
not Shalom. It's, what the hell is it called? It starts with an S. It's, I'm sure I'm going to find it somewhere, and I'm going to kick myself for not knowing it. But they believe in sort of like a disconnect from God, which for them, I suppose, is a kind of hell. But it's not the hell like burn for eternity like the Christian hell. No, they don't have that. But for them, it's like, oh, no, you don't get to live forever. You get to sort of, like, go into nothingness. That's hell. And you're like, no, it's not. it feels exactly like before you were born. Nothing. Yeah.
Sounds like getting a little bit closer to the truth.
Yeah, just a little bit. Okay, rule number five, or commandment number five, is that honor your parents. So that's really a bit, let's do what they say and don't curse them, or, you know, again, death if you do. So you got to listen to your parents and really seriously listen to your fucking parents.
Yeah. Cooked in there really, really hard. I like that one. It's a good one that old people would sneak in there. It's like,
oh,
children,
yeah,
do what I say.
Do what I say or you're going to die. Okay, so finally, there's no killing or you're going to be killed.
I know.
Because who, like, you just killed that guy, but you're not supposed to kill. It's a very, very problematic commandment because we recognize, number one, although everyone's always saying, like, wow, that's a really good commandment, you're like, you know what? It doesn't really work out. That commandment doesn't fucking work out because, number one, the person issuing the commandment issues death for breaking that commandment. So now you're like, well, the person who kills him, what, he's sanctioned by God and therefore is not killing? I guess there are exceptions or not. Very confusing, right? There's no thing saying no killing unless mandated by God. I'll be honest, there isn't that. But the whole subcontext of the fucking Bible says that. So now you have a problem with your commandments where they don't even make sense within your belief system. So you either accept the commandments and reject everything else, or accept everything else and reject the commandments.
Or you can just cherry pick like everybody else does.
Or you can do that. Okay, so no killing or you're going to be killed. No adultery. And I mean, can we be realistic for 5 seconds here? If you're going to kill everyone that commits adultery, you're going to fucking kill half your population just right off the bat. That's not a really good way to grow. Okay, so obviously you're not going to kill, you can't kill every adulterer because everybody does it. Next up, no stealing. Okay, well, that's good. You try to steal something and you're put to death. So you learned your lesson, I hope. That's a really good deterrent. Don't steal or we'll kill you.
Well, that's one of those old school laws that, you know, I can understand why they put that on the books and they make it one of those holy ones because, you know, that's the fabric of society. If you can't trust your neighbor not to steal your shit, then you're going to find out that all of your people are just going to be caving in the skulls of anybody who moves close to them and starts looking at their stuff, which leads us into that next one about coveting, right?
Well, no, that's not the next one. The next one after that is no lying against your neighbor. And really by neighbor, they mean people of the same race, of the same tribe. Because really, you can lie to everybody else. I mean, throughout the Bible, that's what they do. I mean, remember the story of Jacob or Abraham. They're all liars. Jacob is a fucking liar. Abraham's a huge fucking liar. He goes around telling that everybody that his wife is his fucking sister, which she is because she's his half-sister, in order to scam the local warlords out of money. Clearly, it's no lying against your fellow Jew or whatever other persons of similar color. And finally, the last one is you cannot covet your neighbor's possessions. So that's what the whole wife, ox, house, these are possessions. Do not covet them, whatever they are. And probably considering the how many animals these motherfuckers have had sex with, they probably covet the ox as much as they covet some of their women, honestly.
Classy. We brought it back to that.
Why not? They did it. I didn't invent this.
You know, I only put it out there that there are some cultures where it's okay. You know, if there was an unspoken law, like one that was not included on Moses' tablets that we don't know about, where if you're caught doing it, they kill you, then maybe it wasn't. Maybe it wouldn't happen. You know, I'm just. It's probably less frequent. It could not have existed at all in this time, you know, or in this specific area with this culture. So, just saying, you're not sure. You're sounding pretty definite. I just want to point out.
It's a story, okay? None of this happened. None of this fucking happened. It's like, oh, Jacob, when you repeated the story of Hercules, I feel that there were some historical inaccuracies. Yeah, it's the story of Hercules, okay?
Fair enough.
This is not fucking real. So, now Moses is basically told by God, you got to come up to Mount Sinai and stay here for like 40 days and 40 nights, which is just, like they love this number, okay? I don't understand what it is about this number. This is the same amount of days that you have for Lent or how long fucking Jesus was in the desert. Apparently they fucking love their 40 days and 40 nights, man.
Wasn't there a Josh Hartnett movie where he...
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was because of Lent. That was Lent.
That was a bad movie.
It was stupid. And then he gets raped. He gets raped at the end. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
And then they make light of that. I'm like, what the fuck? He just got raped.
Well, it's because when a guy ends up having sex, it's always awesome.
It's never rape.
It's never bad.
Okay, so anyways, so he gets commissioned, come up to the mountain and whatever. So Moses leaves Aaron, his brother, in charge. You remember Aaron, right? His brother that's also learned a couple magic tricks. He doesn't really get to talk to God, and later on he gets fucked, but that's going to be for part 3. But for now, Aaron's doing okay, but he's going to eat it later. So Aaron gets left in charge, and sort of Moses takes off. So in the time that Moses is gone, all the Jews sort of like gather up, and they're like, hey, we want to pray to this God, this new God, because remember, like, this is the God of Abraham, right? He has to introduce them to this new fucking funky god. And like anyone of that culture, they're going to be like, please, can we have an idol that we can go fucking worship, right? We want to worship this god. Give us our TV. So that this is our common way of expressing ourselves. So Aaron's like, all right, we'll gather up all your gold and your jewelry and shit like that. So they melt it, and he makes a calf. And the reason he makes a calf is that it's probably one of the most common, like, symbols of worship around that region at the time, right? Symbol of fertility, symbol of strength, symbol of agriculture. It's like having a tractor on your logo.
Yeah, it's like, you know? Symbol of we gonna eat well tonight.
Yeah, there you go. You're going to have fucking steak. I mean, you don't walk into a fucking restaurant with some bullhorns in there and think, I'm going to eat well today. Really? So, richness is the best way to just describe it. And actually, that particular symbol shows up quite a bit. I don't know if you remember when I was talking about unicorns in the Bible. Turns out that the word unicorn is actually a mistranslation. So most of you out there, don't use this as an argument because it's a fucking bad one. The word is a mistranslation in the King James Version. The unicorn is actually a kind of extinct bull-like animal that went extinct, I think, in the 17th century. But this particular type of animal, this is the ones that you see on cave walls, you know, the bulls with the big horns? That's what those are. And that's what the golden calf was. It's the same fucking animal. The local animal that's like the symbol of power and fucking awesomeness. So they make a golden one, and everybody's having a good time. They decide to have a fucking party and shit like that. So meanwhile, Moses gets his fucking tablets, and he's walking down. Like, this is at the time where finally when they finish, because I guess it takes a while to do this. I don't know why it takes a while. Oh, I don't know. Maybe a crazy man walks up to the mountain with a toolbox full of chisels and decides he's going to make his own rules. Maybe. So he comes back down, but while he's up there, God tells him, he's like, you better hurry, because I'm just about to fucking kill these people. Like, they're really starting to piss me off. I just told them, what was rule number two, right? Fucking no idols. Get your ass down there. I'm so close to killing them. And Moses talks God down from a ledge so many fucking times in the Bible, you do not know. You don't even know. It's like, no wonder they worship Moses. He's always saving their asses according to the way it's written. It's like, please, God, don't kill them now. No, it's fine. Why did you take us all out to the desert here just to kill us now? Don't do it. But he's regularly having these conversations.
And Moses also seems like a sorcerer. I mean, you were talking about that time when he was fighting those people, and, you know, the battle was going well and going badly based on Moses' arm strength. That seems like it has, you know, a lot of time they keep on tying it up and making him quite a mythic, magical figure as opposed
like
to God. Yeah,
it's like a Merlin character. So Merlin, I mean Moses, walks back down the mountain, and guess what he sees? Everybody's fucking partying around a gold calf. So he takes these two stone tablets that have taken like 40 days to make, smashes them on the ground because he's fucking pissed. And then he takes this golden calf and he throws it into this massive fire and melts it. And then, but okay, he's not done, all right? This is the beginning. So he takes the whole calf and he smashes it to pieces. I don't know how long this takes. Smashes it to dust. Then takes that dust and puts it in water and makes everybody drink it. That's what he does. He's that big of a dick.
Goldschlager.
Yeah, he makes everybody fucking drink. And then he's not done. Once everybody's still fucking sick, he's like, who's still loyal to God? Which so happens comes from his own household, the house of Levi. Remember how I mentioned that last episode? Said there was going to be some significance to that. Well, now there's this significance here. Everybody from his house, so every relative of his, he's like, calls to arm and he tells him, here's a fucking sword. Slaughter brother or sister, whoever is not loyal to God. And they set about killing them. It ain't 9/11 them. There's 3,000 dead by the time they're done. This is 9/11 to them. So this is how he teaches everybody a fucking lesson for doing what I feel just comes natural, right? Having a party and setting up a fucking idol for them to worship. They didn't know any better, and his own brother is the one that cast it. So you don't think that maybe they were like, cool, Aaron is in charge here. He made a golden calf. It must be okay, right? Holy shit, Moses comes back down, kills 3,000 of them just for fucking doing that because he loses his shit.
Man, I bet
that's
you.
What happens.
So what did Aaron say about that? Aaron was just like, boy, those people, they deserve that.
Well, he gets his later.
Yeah, but for the moment.
Well, Moses rebukes him. He fucking rebukes him. Is that good enough for you? He rebukes him.
Fair enough, I guess.
He gets a talking to, but, you know, I guess no one was really paying attention the first time, even though, you know, God decided that he was going to make an appearance. So finally, now he decides that it's just going to be, you know, he's going to show them why everyone should be afraid past this. So God decides he's going to make, like, another appearance. But he shows up as a sort of fucking crazy dark cloud, right? And everybody's sort of scared to shit. And they're like, oh, we're going to die, blah, 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 blah. And Moses says, don't worry. It was just to make sure that, you know, you have the fear of God in you. I'm going to go back up, and I'm just going to go make some more tablets. And I'm going to come back down with them. So he leaves again. He leaves again, but because he needs, I guess they need these tablets. And apparently, I guess this is the only place where they can build them on top of Mount Sinai. Maybe there's a good rock. I don't know, shale.
Yeah, better reception. Even though he already got the commandments, I wonder if the first set was different than the second. Like the first, because you know we always shit on the Ten Commandments for being, you know, if you're only going to do ten, these are not the best ten. It wasn't the most well thought out set of rules. It seems kind of thrown together flim-flammy style. But maybe the first set was really good, and the second one he went up and he's like, man, I got to get home. I don't want to come home and find another fucking golden calf sitting up there. These kids, you can't take your eye off them for a second.
Well, even right after the whole golden calf incident is when you have like the laws of the tabernacle, which is supposed to be the rules that they lay out a bit later after wilderness, I think Deuteronomy or whatever, for basically how to sacrifice shit, right? There's a very complicated etiquette that comes later, but I think that's the sort of like to make up for that whole golden calf incident. Be like, here are the specific rules because he will flip out. He will flip out. There have been characters in the Bible that have been killed for burning incense wrong. All right. Obviously, he's very sensitive about that shit when it starts. The beginning, he's very sensitive. So, he sort of Moses goes out to get the Ten Commandments again because it's important. And the whole time he's having conversations with God to try to get God to be like, because God's like, I'm gonna get out of here. I'm not gonna come with you guys. Because I'm just going to fucking kill you if I have to be around you. Like, every day, I just want to annihilate you, and it's best if I don't stick around. It's basically what he says. And Moses is kind of like, again, this is sort of like this talking him off a ledge thing, being like, you know what, yeah, I think, you know, we had a deal here, you know, this whole covenant you had with Jacob, like, what the fuck, man? And you were late. Not cool. But yeah, so God's like, all right, I suppose I can calm down. I can try to not kill you. But this time he's like, you're gonna carve out the Ten Commandments yourself. I'm not doing it. So the second time it's like Moses has to do the work. And guess what? When he's doing the work, he doesn't get any food and any water for 40 days. You try to do the math on that one and see how long you fucking last. But apparently he does. He lasts. He survives. He works for 40 fucking days and nights to finish 2 stone tablets. It was really that hard? 40 days. Man. It's like, no wonder there are no juice stone cutters. Slow. So guess what? When he comes back down, his face is literally glowing. Like, he's got God face on for a long time. And everybody gets freaked out. So they're running away from him and that kind of stuff. They're like, he's a super god or whatever. So he has to put a veil on. So that everybody stops freaking out. And then he's just like, here are the new commandments. And by the way, God told me to build like this really specific ark. You know, like him and his arcs. He's got a thing for arcs. He's like, he gets really into the goddamn minutia of that shit. He's like one of those miniature shipbuilder dudes who just geeks out. He geeks out on arcs. That's his whole fucking shit. So he's like, build me a golden ark. And this is really funny, too, because he was rebuking everyone. He's saying, don't make any idols out of gold. But he is, like, making a kennel for a god is fine. You just can't make any representations of him.
Yeah, just, but he's like, just yeah. not anything that can be taken for something else, you know? Just make a little one for me.
Right. So just make me a box, and that's what I'm going to live. So everybody builds one out of, I guess, whatever gold they shit out. Because the first time around, I'm like, you can't make gold pop out of nowhere. So I'm assuming somebody went through all that poo that Moses forced them when he forced them to eat the gold of whoever fucking survived.
Oh, silly Jacob. The Jews always have more gold.
I know, more gold. They pop out of nowhere. They're Jew gold. So they use their Jew gold, they melt it down, and they make the ark. And Moses puts the commandments in the ark. And from then on, there's like this weird cloud that sort of like stands on top of the arc. Now let me throw this out there here. If you were to watch a cartoon, right, and there's a dark cloud that hangs over whatever object is directly above it, what do you normally think about that object? Is that a good object, or is that maybe the personification of evil?
Evil.
Can I put that out there?
Evil.
Yeah. Right, evil. And they use this cloud cover as a way of telling them when they should move. So when it's at its most evil, when the cloud is really thick, is when they move. So it's kind of freaky.
And up until this point, I mean, if you take a look at God's behavior, it does seem quite evil. He hasn't done a hell of a lot that would make you think that he is a, you know, a god of goodness. And, you know, at the very least, the Jews have always kind of rejected that loving God thing, and I give them props for that.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. The only time they mention his goodness is actually the part where, remember what I was saying, that he was on the first time he's on Mount Sinai, or no, I think the second time, he wants to see God, right? Because before then, God's like a huge cloud of whatever. So he's like, I want to see you. And God's like, okay, but here's what you got to do. You got to hide in a crevice, and I'm just going to walk right by you, but you can't look at my face. Because there's so much goodness in my face that you're going to fucking die if you see it. That's how handsome he is. So they refer to his goodness there. So he's so good that if you saw him, you would die. And again, I'm going to put this out there. If you were watching a cartoon, if you look at the good guy's face, do you normally die instantly? Or does that happen when you look at the bad guy's face? Just going to put that out there. Just going to put that out there. That sounds like Medusa. He's, what was he, Medusa? Like, what the fuck? He's obviously an evil god. An evil god gave you your list of commands. He sounds evil.
Agreed.
All right, well, you know what? That's the end of part two. So part three will be their wanderings through the desert and the final days of Aaron and Moses. So the next show is going to be a huge one because it's obviously much more hilarious, by the way. Part two is the weakest one, because I'm like, that's just when you get the Ten Commandments, and at least I suppose we can talk about that. But the next one just doesn't even make any sense. God throws so much shit at the Jews at this point, it makes the Holocaust look like a fucking walk in the park. Not joking. That's what's sad about it. It's almost like, did you not see the writing on the wall? This is the wrong God to trust. He keeps fucking you over. I think it's time to believe in a new one.
I would have stuck with the calf.
I would have stuck with the calf, too. I would have stuck with the calf. Okay, let's talk. I want to talk quickly before we leave, because we have to mention this, because everybody's talking about it. That some of you may know, a few days ago, the United States killed bin Laden in a suburb of Abbottabad in Pakistan. And I don't know if you've been reading a bit of the news about this, because I was reading some of the aftermath of it. And there was, because there's been... it's unfortunate when you kind of lend speculation to the conspiracy theorists, because, you know, they dumped bin Laden's body out at sea, right?
Yeah.
So that's what everybody's talking about now. And no one will ever get over this. We're never going to get over this, Ryan. This is what we're going to have to be talking about for, like, the next fucking 10 years.
Like, let the idiots do it. I was watching The Daily Show. And they showed a clip of Buzz Aldrin getting shoved by a dude who was calling him a liar and a coward.
Oh, and he punched him in the face?
Yeah, or I don't know if it was a punch or it was a shove, but...
No, it was a punch in the face. He punched a dude in the face for calling him a liar and a coward about the moon landing. So Buzz punched him in the face, because that's how Buzz is.
Oh, so it was Buzz punching him and not the other way around. I just thought it was a crazy altercation. Yeah.
No, Buzz punched a dude in the face. An 80-year-old man knocked out like a 30-year-old nerd.
I'm down with that. So, you know, so long as people, idiots are going to believe what they're going to believe. There is nothing that you can say nowadays about anything that there ain't going to be a percentage of people who are just going to say the opposite because they're contrarians, and that's just how it is.
Well, I wanted to mention this sort of like this American conspiracy theory, because that's like more of the American side, right? They're going to believe that bin Laden is not dead. But on the Pakistanis actually believe in a completely different conspiracy, which is that they didn't actually kill bin Laden in Pakistan. The Americans are just doing that to try to embarrass in Pakistan. Did you hear about this?
No, I didn't hear that one.
Yeah, that's kind of how, because I wanted to know what the reaction of people in Pakistan were, and it's very weird, right? Because they're not all together. There was some warning, but it wasn't that huge. Most people were in kind of shock, and then some people were like, "I don't think he was in Pakistan. You're lying," because I think that there is a certain amount of people that are in complete denial about the reality of Pakistan. Like, they don't quite realize that the Secret Service, the Pakistani Secret Service, had provided weapons, intelligence to the Taliban and Al-Qaeda fighting Americans. Like, that was clear from fucking day one. Just, Pakistan Secret Service is not on your side.
Well, it's basically the whole country is just a gigantic jumble of confusion, and it's a bunch of people pulling a bunch of different ways, and you have certain factions in the government that are totally, well, not, I don't want to say pro-USA, because here's, you know, one of the reasons why you've got, one of the reasons you've got people being so nervous about saying that Bin Laden was right outside, like 40 kilometers away from the capital of Pakistan, is that makes people nervous. I mean, you say that, and all of a sudden you have to say, well, what comes next? Is America going to give us a bitch slap? Are we about to become the next fucking target on the American Middle East fucking freedom?
Freedom Brigade?
Yeah, exactly. Are we the next target of all that amazing freedom coming from America?
I don't know. You can see from their perspective, though, that, I mean, there's a certain amount of, like, for them, their conspiracy is that they're in denial about their involvement with sort of the more extremist side of Islam. They're like, no, it's not happening within our borders. I'm like, you have a tentative government formed as a military coup there temporarily to avoid fundamentalists from taking over. Yeah, that you're stable. Absolutely fucking stable. I trust you.
Yeah, the whole situation is very unstable. And the people that are... people that are wondering whether or not Pakistan's on our side, whether or not Pakistan's our enemy, we don't really have that much of a right to be all that demanding of Pakistan of anything. Basically, Pakistan has to put up with America dropping bombs on Pakistanis. They have to explain that. And it really doesn't make the situation in the Middle East any more stable. So I'm amazed that we get the support that we do from Pakistan. This whole Bin Laden thing, notwithstanding.
let's use a little funny thought experiment, and let's pretend that there was a, say, 1/20. We're going to be really generous. 1/20 of our population, the Canadian population, that had decided to commit terrorist acts against the United States. At what level of bombing of innocent civilians? Because we would recognize ourselves that we have these crazy fundamentalists. How many innocents would we tolerate in sort of the crossfire?
I'm not really able to play that mind experiment.
Right, I know. It's wild, eh, when you think about it. Because, I mean, I think around here it'd be zero. But at the same time, you're like, something's going to happen, right? We're privileged in we're not on the wrong side of bombs dropping. You know, when Pakistan has to put up with bombings of their own citizens, we're like, oh yeah, of course they should. I'm sorry, what? I mean, like, would you put up with that? I mean, even if there was a part of your population that was, you know,
obviously rotten to the core and right, totally anti-American, it's like, yeah, still the bombings are a little bit much. And
yeah, and they're, I'd be like, I would say, at least if I was Pakistan, like, at the end of the day, we're pretty far away from you, so could you, I could even, you know, as a Canadian, it's like the border is there, so even then I understand we're probably going to get bombed, but hard to justify when a person is half a world away. Now you're just like, why are you here again exactly? Why are you here? Please answer me that question. Why are you here? And I guess that's the kind of question that Americans have to ask themselves in Afghanistan now, right? Why are they there? And here's the problem, too, because I hate the Taliban. And really, when we leave, because we have to,
because you can't stay forever.
You cannot stay forever, but the reality will be women will still get acid thrown in their face, will be denied the right to their persons and their education, and that's just something I got to accept.
You got to accept that sucky places are going to suck.
Yeah. They're going to suck. There's nothing you can fucking do about it. You're going to go there, you're going to get acid thrown in your face. That's just how it is, man. That fucking blows, but you can't stay there. You gotta go. You gotta go. And that blows. All right, you got anything else to say about Bin Laden death? Other than the fact that I think in the atheist scene, I would say probably more than any other scene, lots of people kind of reacting with a certain amount of disgust at the kind of jubilation of the American public over the death of Bin Laden. And you know what? I think that probably a majority of people who experienced that kind of jubilation probably woke up the next morning feeling a little bit ashamed at celebrating the death of somebody else. But we're not American, so I don't really understand it from their perspective. They probably see it as some kind of, you know, sort of catharsis, some bit of justice. But I feel that to some degree, even those that might be directly involved, those people that have lost loved ones, friends and family and so on and so forth, I mean, even though they might have felt some degree of happiness at his death for a while, I think it would have just probably opened up some reminders of their existence and made the whole thing just sadder. It's just, that's all that death does. I mean, it just makes shit sadder in the end of the day. It's just all sad.
Well, it's kind of hard in a weird nebulous war on terror to feel like there's any kind of goal that you can really work towards. But I mean, killing Bin Laden is one of those few opportunities where you can cross something off the fucking checklist and say this was definitely a positive step forward. I mean, and it's the first really good news that we've heard in the war on terror for a while. You know, so I don't look at it so much. I mean, you look at the photos of everybody celebrating on the street, and it's hard not to think about when you saw the footage of people in the Middle East celebrating at 9/11. But at the same time, I think to a certain degree, people are celebrating the idea that that's a terrorist they don't have to worry about anymore. Bin Laden was the boogeyman, and we just killed him. So now that's all of a sudden you're feeling like you don't have to worry about this guy organizing another gigantic bombing of an embassy or flying planes into buildings again. So I don't really mind the celebrating too much because it didn't seem all that crazy hate-filled to me. It seemed more like a relief. Everybody was just relieved.
They were just waiting for that to happen.
It only took 10 years.
Sometimes things take time. I mean, we live in the fast food age. 10 years ain't nothing historically.
Well, you know, we were looking in the wrong place because, we were believing the wrong people. What can you do?
Well, like I said before, when the intelligence community is not on your side, then you're not going to get any of the right information. So, the problem is the enemy was still partially Pakistan. That's the problem.
The problem is people over there hate us. So it's probably best just to
get the fuck out of Dodge.
Yeah, pretty much.
Get the fuck out of Dodge, America. I sincerely hope that that's good news to any people listening to this that are actually overseas, because there are some. You know, we have a fairly large contingent of people who listen to the show that are, and hopefully that was kind of like the, yes, I'm getting the fuck out of here. Maybe that's what you need. That's what everybody needs. Okay, well, you know what? I'd like to thank everybody for joining us. Free members, welcome. Please consider becoming full members. That really definitely helps us, especially during this time. And everybody else who's already a member, a patron, thank you so much for your patronage. We appreciate it. You're the reason why we're able to do this, and we like doing it. And part three, I hope, is going to be better, because I always want to improve, right?
Best part ever.
It will be the best part ever. It won't be like Return of the Jedi. It'll be like Empire Strikes Back. Not that I want to confuse anybody.
Well, as long as it's not like Batman Forever.
No. We're not going to pull a Batman Forever. No. Now, is there one movie that was in a trilogy that was better than all the other ones?
Trying to think off the top of my head.
No, not really. Third is usually the worst, eh?
Yeah, Star Trek 3 wasn't very good.
Nope, that was a pretty big piece of shit. Aliens 3 was a piece of shit, but apparently it was only because the director was being fucked over.
Yeah, well, David Fincher directed that.
But yeah, and it looked beautiful, it just didn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, no, it was stupid. If you read their notes, like the planet was supposed to be made of wood or something. It's just,
what?
There's a lot.
That's
there's
stupid.
Some good drugs out there in Hollywood, I imagine.
Jeez, that's stupid. That's like Indiana Jones and the Haunted Mansion stupid.
Oh, there we go. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade.
There you go.
That was the best of the three.
That's true. Indiana Jones. Wow, we figured that out. Okay, well, cool. We're gonna Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade it. Wicked. That's what we're gonna do.
Even though awesome. The second one was the Ark. Eh, what can you do?
Yeah, you mean chronologically?
Well, I'm saying that we just did the Ark one, even though the Ark of the Covenant was Raiders right. of the Lost Ark.
No, but don't worst. Go too far. Don't go too far in that. I thought you were saying that since it was the second episode, we were as awful as Temple of Doom.
Temple of Doom wasn't bad. I mean, I know
it was bad.
She screams a lot, and that's annoying. And
she sucks!
Steven Spielberg married her, so that explains why she was there.
Yeah, no shit. No, that movie blew. And what the fuck was with his kid psychic? I didn't need him. Short Round?
He was pleasantly racist. I enjoyed it.
You know, I had a buddy who can, like a Chinese friend who convinced everybody that he was Short Round. Around, because he couldn't tell the difference. That's fucking awesome. All right. We're going to leave you and see you in a few days for the part 3 of our Moses trilogy. Let our people go. My name is Jacob Forte.
And I'm Ryan Harkness.
Have a good atheist day, everybody.